Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, are you there? Can you hear me?
I can.
Where are you?
Is anyone alive out there? Can anyone hear me?
Oh, yeah, yes. What's that from?
Titanic.
Oh, yes, it is.
At the end of Titanic.
I feel like they sampled it for something, but I can't remember. Can't remember what it is. Now, are you one of these people that would eat something while you're going around the supermarket?
No, gross.
Are you not? I think that was a big reaction. That was a bigger reaction than I expected.
Absolutely not. What kind of a heathen eats in the supermarket? Absolutely not.
Even as a child, your mum never let you have a little bag of Smith's crisps.
Absolutely not. Firstly, really? We haven't paid for them. Secondly, no. What kind of a child, what kind of a parent can't control their child long enough to not eat in the supermarket? What kind of a child is that hungry that you've underfed them to the point where the only thing to placate them is to feed them in a supermarket?
Yeah. No,
hideous. It's terrible parenting. It's just hideous. Absolutely hideous.
Yeah, my parents weren't into it either. Although I feel like maybe sometimes I ate like a little carrot or something on the way around, which, you know, no packet.
Well, okay, so I think that's different. If there's the little, you know, free fruit for kids basket, that's fine.
Yeah.
Because it shuts kids up while they're walking around and, you know, whatever. Mm. That little free fruit for kids basket I think is a great initiative. I also think, you know, back in the day, you know, if the butcher wanted to give you a little cocktail
salve, that's
fine.
Yeah.
But I don't think kids that open up chocolate bars or packets of chips or soft drink, I think it's gross. There's nothing I hate more than seeing like a 3 or 4 year old child sitting in a trolley with its legs dangling and both its tiny grubby little fingers grasping at like, I don't know, a Coca-Cola or a Pepsi bottle or a Lift or a Solo or something.
Yeah.
And it's sort of drinking it, holding it right up to its head like it's some kind of sort of, you know, sort of Neanderthal, and then it pulls it away and it kind of goes and it's got this ring around its mouth of like a rash where it's been having all this, you know, in all this sugary hideousness. Ugh, yeah. I can't abide it. Gross.
Well, this is all a shame, and because I had an idea for a cafe.
Did you?
Well, you know, it's come from lockdowns, and you know, I'm pretty much out of lockdown now. I'm sure there'll be more in the future, though.
Let's just wait and see.
Yeah, so let's keep this idea in mind. But, you know, I've really been missing eating out. So, and the only place you're really allowed to go in lockdown is to the supermarket. So I thought maybe, you know, somehow you could sneak a little camping stove in there and do up a little meal, sit there with your friends, and then just pay for everything on the way out.
Isn't that basically like a cafeteria at a shopping center, a supermarket?
Yeah.
Like they have it all through Europe. You've lived there. You know that. Like in France, I remember going to all the different places in France and they've got their own like a mini Sizzler.
I guess this is more just for lockdown places. So it's like a little mini workaround when you can't go to any cafe or anything. Next time it happens,
you could just be patient for lockdown to end. Here's a thought.
Yeah, well, we're pretty much there now. But, I thought you'd be more into this idea, you know. It's no, very social. You can sit in the banana aisle next to the watermelons.
Can you imagine people banging into you with their trolley and the annoyance of, like, people on the phone? You know, you know what I can't stand? Here's another thing. You've really got me going now. When you go to the supermarket and there's those absolute fuckwits who walk around with their Bluetooth or their hands free and they've got their phone on speaker and they're holding it out in front of their mouth and they're like, you know, and they're talking about, like, their life, and they're talking about how important things are, or, like, other mums from school, and they are just, and they've got a coffee in their hand, and their hip has popped, and they've kind of got their Lululemon or their Lorna Jane sort of knotted on the side, or one of those awful PE, you know, athleisure brands from, like, one of the bloody influencers off Instagram.
Right.
And they think they're these yummy mummies. They've got huge lips that have been filled with, like, spack filler, like they got their pool stuck, their lips stuck in a pool drain as it was draining water.
Yeah.
And these women, they're just there and they're just talking in their phone and they just think that the most important person in that supermarket at that moment is themselves. They are so loud. They do not care about anybody else and they almost want other people to listen to them.
Oh, you reckon?
Yeah, and I just love walking behind them and, like, crunching bags of chips and, like, really, like, you know, excuse me, excuse me, you're in my way. You know, like, I'm like, get the hell out of my way, bitch. I can't handle them. I hate them.
I mean, so many phones now come with, like, headphones are in the packet, or you must have so many pairs of headphones at home. I think that too. Like, on the train, if someone's playing their music out loud or if they're playing a game and there's, like, a cha-ching, cha-ching, some kind of noise happening every 3 seconds and it's
I'll
like
tell
a 40-minute train
up.
Ride. Yeah.
I can't handle it. You take your Candy Crush and shove it up your ass. I hate listening to people playing games. And those people in the – you know, there's these particular people that I'm referring to that do that in the supermarket. I'm just like, has – some of that lip filler leaked into your head, into your ears? Like, has it blocked up your ear cavities and you've got to have the phone on speakerphone because the only, like, sensory receptors that aren't ruined by the filler is, like, your nostrils and sound's got to reverberate up through your sinuses for you to understand? It's so fucking annoying.
Past the rhinoplasty. Yeah.
It's so annoying. So bad. Oh, my God. Kills me.
All right.
You've started something now. I have to get over it.
I should hit the theme before. You should. Go, could be a whole podcast about your friends in the supermarket.
Totally. Oh, God.
All right. Here we go.
Well, here we are. We find ourselves on this latest episode of Fruity Alexia. I'm Alexander.
And I'm Alex. Now, you go.
I was going to say, it's great. Great to be here with you again.
Yeah, bright and early.
Ready to rock and roll.
Yeah. Do we have any news? We haven't talked about Belbos for, you know, at least 20 minutes probably. What's happening in the Belbos world? For anyone who doesn't know, we had this great idea of, you know, the one part of the body that no one's really looking out for is the elbow, I think, you know. And I was having a bit of trouble with dry elbows and I was using too much chapstick. And we had a great idea for something similar to a chapstick, but that is the size of your elbow and comes in lovely, fruity, delicious flavors.
I think also Alex is underselling the amount of trouble it seemed like he was having with his elbows because it felt like every episode that we were recording – you've never seen anybody with such dry elbows. I mean, it's just terrifying, wasn't
it? It's ongoing too, but I just thought, you know, I should put that to bed a little bit. It's not.
Well, look, what I can tell you about the development of the Belbos brand is that it is underway and we are in discussions with several manufacturing facilities to see if we can actually make something come to life.
Yeah, you've been already squirting it into the eyes of various small mammals. And
Pretty much.
All right, so we just need to, you know, just we'll keep the brand awareness going. Just mention it every few episodes, and then there should be some developments in the future. We hope, you know.
Yes, I can't wait.
Yeah,
you know, it'll be the must-have gift for Christmas.
It will, yeah. Christmas 2020.
2027.
27. Put it in your diary, everybody. So we're about 13 episodes now into Pop. Oh, sorry. We're about 11 episodes now into Popstars Australia, and there's only about 13 all up, and then maybe a couple of bonus episodes. So, you know, I feel like series one of Fruity Alexia's in the home stretch. And then I guess we've got to still cover Chantelgate after that.
Yes, absolutely. Do we have to cover it? That is just one of the things people are waiting for.
Exactly, yeah. It feels like so long. I mean, so much has happened since they've released an album.
Well, it was, darling. It was 20 years ago, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, and then we'll have a look at the albums and bits and pieces like that after, and probably do a bit of a, like, remember these tracks and, you know. Yeah, is there anything else you wanted to cover before we wrap up our series one of Fruity Alexia? Like,
oh, look, I'm not sure. I mean, I think we could let our listeners decide that, I think. I mean, I think Chantelgate is so important to cover.
Yeah,
I think the albums and, you know, maybe some of their solo stuff we can talk about at the same time. And, you know, I'd be curious if we did a little bit of a where are they now situation
that's a good idea.
Some of those people.
Yeah.
So that might require a little bit of legwork to actually suss out and find people. I reckon the hardest person to get a hold of will actually be Dorothy Gutuba over at Netflix in Kenya. She's probably going to be harder than all of them.
She's got 12 layers of personal assistance to get through beforehand.
And security, and she lives in a high-fence mansion. I mean, I don't know. But we'll give it a red-hot go.
Okay, maybe we can fly over there and sit outside, like camp
outside.
Can you
imagine? Yeah. We're going, like, Fruity Alexia goes on safari.
Goes to Kenya. I'd love that. You know, I feel like we've got to milk this series one of Popstars Australia before we get onto series two and Scandalous, because I don't know how much more.
Listen, even Scandalous couldn't milk Scandalous.
Poor Scandalous. Yeah.
Oh, look, I kind of can't wait to get to it, because I have less of an affection for Scandalous, so I can't wait to to.
There are probably a few more shreds there to be torn off, I imagine.
So. Oh, I can't wait. I'm salivating at the prospect.
Yeah, I can see. Yeah, we've got webcams going here because, you know, I'm in Sydney, you're in Brisbane. So talking between interstate chat here, and I can see even over this dubious internet connection, the amount of saliva drooling from the size of your mouth.
if you hear my microphone crackling, it's because of the drool, the salivating for shredding Scandalous is dripping into my microphone.
All right. So if we want to get to Scandalous, I suppose we'd better get on with this episode.
We should. Let's get on with it.
Life is full of awesome what-ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
All right, here we go.
Hey, 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 hey!
Okay, it's time for the publicity rounds, and the band are faced with the challenges of meeting the public, finally. They're ushered from a strange family meeting that I'm sure we'll get on to talking about shortly onto a host of radio studios, live events, and eager autograph hunters. And then they await the news of how their first single, Poison, has performed in the Australian charts in the final scene. And we do actually cross live, although it's now 20 years later, to Chris Moss, who will reveal whether or not the whole pop stars experiment has worked.
Will he?
Yeah, will he?
Or well, will he?
Well, we'll find out at the end of Fruity Alexia.
Or will. Fruity
Alexia. So, yes, they kind of start in this random scene where they seem to be given these weird frames with their traits written onto it, backed onto some sheet music. How do you describe these little plaques they're being handed out?
I would describe them as something that I personally would not wish to receive. it's like, you know, it sort of says, Alexander, Capricorn, and then has a bit of a blurb about the traits of, I don't know, Alexander and maybe the traits of a Capricorn.
Yeah.
And
so what would your traits be? Good skincare routine?
That's very kind of you. Yes, it would be that. It's not true at all, but I totally take that as a compliment for those people who are only listening with their ears and can't see me. Mm. Beautiful skin, yes. No, what would it say? I don't know. Mine would probably
dental
say...
Dental hygiene.
Yeah, good dental hygiene.
Yeah.
Mine would probably say very clean. Very clean, very, very clean. And probably also, I don't know, what else would it say? Charismatic, charming.
Yeah. Keep in mind, I think this is written by Tiffany's parents, it seems, in the show. So it would
They'd think I'm debonair and charming.
Well, I was thinking, what would your parents write about you?
that'd probably be very different. No, my mum would write nice things about me. My dad would too, actually, but they'd be very differently written. My mum would be writing hilarious things about me, I think. You know what would be funnier? If your mum wrote one about me.
Either with either of our mums writing stuff about either of us, I don't think we'd want it publicised on national television.
Pretty much, no. Pretty much.
Yeah. But anyway, they must be in Sydney, are they? Yeah.
Yeah, I presume they're in Sydney, and I think it's sort of a opportunity to kind of, you know, meet the parents, and, you know, all the girls are meeting each other's parents. I guess they've been sort of lumped together, living together for a number of months. So it seems like they're out for lunch with Tiffany's mum and dad, I presume, and it looks like a present they've given them and framed it, and it looks like one of those things that's maybe come from, you know, an innovations catalog.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if those things even exist anymore, but I remember loving innovations catalogs and all the weird and wonderful, crazy shit that you could get from them. And, you know, you would sort of write in on an order form, you know, the names, you know, Belinda spelled like this, Sally spelled like this, Sophie spelled like this. These are their dates of birth or whatever. And then they come back in the mail and then you chuck a dirty old frame from the reject shop on them and give them to the girls. That's what I think it probably was.
Yeah. Did you get the feeling Sophie's looking at it, you know, when you've been given a gift and you're just sort of staring at it, trying to think of something to say?
I think you're giving Sophie too much credit. I think Sophie's looking at it going, my name means all this?
Oh, right. Really?
I don't know. I mean, because she's looking at it like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah.
I don't even think she's looking at like how to be polite about it, because so far she hasn't been impolite. I think she's probably just a very polite person, but I think looking at the way she's looking at it, she's a bit like, what the fuck is this?
Right, yeah.
And I think maybe she's not exactly – Sophie may be one of the least in touch with that kind of airy-fairy, nice, hippy-dippy stuff.
Right, yeah.
You know, whereas Tiffany, I think – is a bit more, and Katie probably is a bit more in touch with that hippie-dippy sort of
the dream
stuff.
Catchers hanging by the window.
Oh, dream catchers, wolves howling at the moon and that kind of thing.
Yeah. Oh, I did love those T-shirts.
Of course you did.
Yeah, no, I didn't really. I don't think I ever had one, but, you know.
Tragique.
Yeah, it was like a big moonlit scene on a T-shirt with a wolf howling at it and a crystal ball or something. Anyway, this is mostly about the publicity rounds this episode. And I think the next thing we see is them going into, you know, being ushered into one of the many radio studios. And Tiffany sort of makes a bit of a throwaway comment. I have to smile all the time now because otherwise I look like a bitch. And I sort of thought, yeah, it's true. You know, if there's cameras being pointed at you the whole time, you know, things can be taken out of context. And it's a bit like last time we were talking about, you know, you meeting David Beckham in the toilets. And imagine if suddenly, you know, you could have gone and sold the story to, you know, some trashy British tabloid, you know, So you've really, as one of those people, you do have to be careful the whole time once you're out and amongst the public.
Yeah, I suppose so too. Like, you know, and also, I mean, a bit different maybe if you're David Beckham and it's you're many years into your career, I suppose. But if you are a young woman and you're sort of thrust overnight in a way into the public limelight, and, you know, I don't think we'd ever seen anything to the scale of Popstars Australia, that first series in this country. So I think, you know, especially because Tiffany kind of came, you know, in with such a huge bang. And I do think she got a bitch edit. And then I think perhaps she started to wise up by this point because they are watching the show in real time. They mentioned later in the episode that they're watching the show on Sunday nights for the first time, like everybody else. Right. So I think maybe she's seen herself in the preceding episodes and kind of gone, hang on a minute.
Yeah, either they're editing it to make me look bad. Yeah,
either people are doing the dirty on me or I'm doing the dirty on myself, maybe. Yeah. So she's fairly, I think, aware of it.
Yeah. And they're in so they're getting interviews. I think they're back in Brisbane now and they're – do you know what the station is? I can't remember. Anyway.
Oh, not a clue. B105 or something. I haven't got a clue.
Yeah, that's right. And the interview questions are like, now you almost have boyfriends.
This bit's going to piss me off. Sorry, go for it.
No, you go. You go. I feel like you've got some thoughts to...
Fuck me. This just kind of follows on from whatever else I've bitched and moaned about in the past, but they ask these hideous questions like, now you almost have some boyfriends. You know, do they miss you? And then they all kind of answer. I think Sophie answers. And then... they sort of ask, you know, so how's living going together? There must be some bitching.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. If it was a house full of teenage boys living together, they would not ask, how's it going? Are you all bitching?
Yeah.
They just wouldn't ask. It's like if it was NSYNC or Backstreet Boys or whoever, they would not ask these questions. It's so weird. It's like you never ever hear, it's like in a movie set. You never ever hear of like a cat fight between Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Hemsworth in a Marvel movie.
No.
It's always about two women. Always. Every single time. It's like two women can't work and be professionals. No. Impossible. It can't happen.
Yeah.
And this inference that these, you know, five women can't live together. I'm not saying there wasn't bitching. There probably was some bitching. They were young women. They were thrust together and they didn't really know each other. That's the other thing to remember.
Yeah, yeah.
But those five women, you know, I don't know. I mean, they kind of were worked to the bone. I don't really imagine they'd have much time to bitch, really.
Yeah.
And then there's that one last question that woman asks. Have you had your boob job yet?
Yeah. What was that about?
I can't even tell you. I levitated. I was furious. I mean, I have no problem with a boob job. Love a boob job. Give me a fake boob all day, every day. Love it. I'm cool with it. You do what you like to your body.
When are you booked in?
You do what you like to your body. I don't have to do it to myself. I don't have to like it for me.
Yeah.
If you want, I don't even have to like it for you, but just you go for it. You know, you want to fill yourself full of stuff, go
for it. The worst, like there's no irony with it as well. It's a direct question with that one as well. It's like,
it's so weird. Have you had your boob job yet? But it's
assumed
like,
that it's going to happen. Yeah.
Yeah. It's so weird. And I mean, it's fine for her to have a boob job. And I presume in later photos, you can see that perhaps there has been some enhancement that has happened, which is totally fine. But I just thought asking directly, it was so strange. I mean, these people are, again, young women, new to this, and the power disparity is really quite real. I mean, these girls are going around the country to the radio stations that are going to make or break them.
Yeah.
And in a way, they have no choice but to answer questions or be confronted by questions. And
yeah.
Tiffany doesn't seem like she's a, you know, backwards and coming forwards, and she seems very confident, and that's fantastic. But it's not about Tiffany and her confidence and comfortability with responding. It's about the professionalism and intention of asking.
Hmm.
I mean, in a
and the message it sends out as well is just totally. Like a normalized thing of, well, you know, if you want to look good, this is what you've got to do.
Well, I think even more than that, it's like you're here to promote your music and we're going to ask you about your boob job.
Yeah.
Well, not your boob job. What you were going to ask, essentially, it's not a, what that question is actually, it's not asking about her boob job, her desire to have a boob job. What it is, it's a question about her self-esteem regarding her breast size that she references in a previous episode. And that's what's quite weird about it is it's not about, oh, you've had so much work done, what's next, which, you know, you might ask somebody who's had a lot of work done today, like Madonna or whatever. Well, you wouldn't because she wouldn't answer it. But you know what I mean? If somebody's known for having a lot of work, cosmetic work done, you might ask, what's next for you? What have you had done? But in this case, this person, all we've seen so far is a young woman on television, a reality television show, saying, she doesn't like how small her breasts are in a previous episode. So you're actually asking this question. In a way, you're preying on her insecurities and you're preying on her low self-esteem or her body dysmorphia around the size of her breasts. So I don't actually think – I don't think it just sets up, you know, the listener of the radio station to go, well, I need big boobs to be sexy. What it sets up is, people are going to challenge me on what I feel lowest about.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's fucked up about, because people questioning you on your trauma – I mean, God, we live in a time now where everybody talks about their trauma. Trauma. Everybody share your trauma. Can't wait. But at that time, 20 years ago, you know, I still don't think it was appropriate. I don't know that it would be appropriate now to ask either, to be perfectly honest, even though we are a bit more emotionally raw with our trauma.
I was thinking at the time, like, there are a lot of things that we're sort of reframing, going, oh, well, that's 20 years ago and that was a bit normalized. But actually with that one, I sort of thought, if someone said that, at that time, I would have been a bit shocked as well, I think, and gone, is that really appropriate? I don't know.
Well, I don't think that was appropriate then, and I don't think it's appropriate now. I mean, I can't imagine why that person thought that was appropriate to ask. And, you know, Tiffany plays it, you know, laughs it off and all that kind of thing. But again, like I said, she doesn't really have a choice. Even if she doesn't want to respond, she has to.
Yeah, because Warner's there over her shoulder going, you've got to sell this single, you know.
That's right. There's these there's these record execs leering around, you know, to kind of say, well, you've got to sell this record, make it number one, so shut up and put up. And that's quite fucked, really. But that's sort of the music industry generally. I think if you were to speak to any professional musician that signed to a major record label, they would all tell you that the going-ons are so shady and so fucked up.
Right, yeah. Now, you recognize one of the radio hosts at that one, and clearly Sophie did too, because weirdly she's getting someone's autograph. Is that right?
Yeah.
And I didn't pick this one up, but you told me this before we started recording.
I didn't know this at the time, but I know it now.
Right,
So the guy that Sophie is getting an autograph from is Jamie Dunn, I think, who at the time anyway, he was Aggro, the puppet.
Wow.
So I don't know if he was Aggro at that exact time, but his claim to fame was being Aggro for most of Aggro's career until recently.
So there was more than one person doing Aggro?
Now there's someone completely different. I think Aggro is owned by a completely different company, an entertainment company now. Yep, and he doesn't have anything to do with it.
Huh. The ice creams?
I think Aggro was owned – I might be wrong. I'm probably going to talk up my ass here, but I think Aggro was owned by Channel 7 for a while, or maybe Channel 7 Queensland or something.
Right.
And I think it was through Jamie Dunn. It was sort of done and produced or something. And then it was – he was Aggro, like the actual puppet, and he would go and do comedy tours and take Aggro around. And, you know, I mean, Aggro is a whole nother thing altogether who, you know, I think as Australians we kind of have – great affection for, but really when you think about how lecherous and leery and gross Aggro was to all of his female co-hosts, you kind of look back on that now and kind of, oh, yeah. I mean, you look back on the way that he spoke to and spoke about, you know, Anne-Marie Bigger and Teresa Livingston and all these other people.
Yeah. I don't really remember, and I think maybe my mum didn't let us watch Aggro, maybe.
Oh, well, that was very smart of her, probably.
Yeah, she's very cluey. She's probably listening too.
Smart woman.
There is one radio, I think it's 4BC or something, and they go in and, you know, one of them's playing with the microphone and she sort of makes a bit of a joke about that. But then she actually does start asking a normal question and I sort of thought, okay, it's not all horrible, like lecherous questions. And I think perhaps maybe this is the only one where it's just a woman there doing the interview as well.
Yeah, I think it might be the only
one
with a
woman doing it.
Don't know
if that's just a coincidence.
But also, dare I say it, that studio looked a little more serious and dry.
Right, yeah.
It looked a little more like an ABC studio than necessarily like one of the big commercial stations.
And actually, I looked at the logo and because it's 4BC, like the 4 does look a lot like an A, and I wonder if they were trying to, like, you know, ride on the coattails.
Oh, it's very possible. Yeah, very possible.
Now, the exciting bit, I guess, for all of us is when we go to, is it Warner Brothers?
Warner Brothers Movie World.
Yeah.
Hollywood on the Gold Coast.
Oh, that's right. Remember that? I used to get so excited. I mean, I never went, but, you know, at the cinema, you know, Village Cinema in Hobart.
Yes.
They always used to play an ad for it and it just looked like the most exciting thing, like all the stuntmen and, you know, Sylvester.
It was so cool, and they did all of like the they had all like the different people in their promo outfits and stuff, and then the big voiceover was Warner Brothers Movie World Hollywood on the Gold Coast, and it was so exciting.
Yeah, And, of course, Sophie used to play Marilyn Monroe there, and we get a bit of a peek into her, you know, past experiences, Marilyn, and she takes us on a tour of the stage and we get to see a little costume that she used to wear.
And we get to see where she sort of stands in the cafe and sings to people while they're having their lunch. And there's a little bit of a video that they play. Somebody's sort of camcorder, you know, video camera is sort of recorded playing her singing, I don't know, what is it, Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And
she does it very well.
Really.
Yeah,
it's quite fun and it's quite – well, I think actually Sophie – I might be wrong with this, but I think Sophie went after Bardot when they folded. I think she actually played Marilyn Monroe in an American telemovie I think it was called The Mystery of Natalie Wood, and it was about Natalie Wood. And, Sophie played the Marilyn character briefly. Okay. I think it was a little bit of a fleeting moment. But
And what was The Mystery of Natalie Wood?
You don't know what happened to Natalie Wood?
No. She was in West Side Story, right?
Among many other things, right, Rebel Without a Cause, West Side Story, Gypsy, a whole bunch of stuff. She died mysteriously on a boat with her husband, Robert Wagner, who you would know from the Austin Powers movies.
Oh, I was going to say Austin Powers as a joke, thinking it was like
he's
an actor
he's
with
the guy with the eye patch.
Yeah, number two.
And number two. And also, I think it's Dennis Hopper. I think it's Dennis Hopper's the other person that's on the boat with her.
Oh,
so you know, they all Dennis died together. Hopper is in die. Because they didn't die, because how'd they die in the 80s? I'll probably let that detail out. Anyway, she died in the 80s. Basically what happens is they go out in a boat. Her, Natalie Wood, her husband Robert Wagner, and I think Dennis Hopper. I could be wrong if it's not Dennis Hopper. It could be John Voight. It could be somebody. Anyway, right. Somebody of that time. And they go out on the boat and Natalie Wood goes missing.
Oh.
And they interview Robert Wagner, they interview whoever the other person is and all the crew and everybody else. Natalie Wood, apparently there was some kind of fight that was overheard. Apparently she was drunk. Apparently she was afraid of the water, afraid of the open water.
Oh, right.
So, you know, some people have tried to say, oh, well, she was furious with Robert, so she tried to climb off the boat and, you know, swim back to the shore. Or, I mean, there was a dinghy, a little sort of, you know, whatever they're called, like a little runabout boat that had, you know, sort of, I think it had become detached or something. And they were like, oh, well, maybe she's fallen in trying to leave the boat herself or whatever. And, but the big mystery is that, you know, something happened on that boat and to her, and that then it was all faked. Everything was faked.
Right.
And that's the great mystery of Natalie Wood.
Well, that sounds like it would make a good movie or series.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Probably why they've done it.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, sorry, we digress.
We digress
to that, yeah.
So it's great seeing Sophie on her home turf, you know.
It is. It is great.
Yeah. And they go to another, you know, more radio interviews. And this person sort of goes, all this is going to end soon. And I guess he's sort of talking about the TV series. Because he sort of goes, you know, you can just concentrate on the music. But I felt a bit of awkwardness in the room when he goes, oh, this is going to end soon. And then he has to qualify it with, you know, I mean, the TV show and the yeah, because I think in everyone's hearts, maybe they feel that part of the success is tied in with the TV show, because they haven't even, as Katie points out, I think in this interview, you know, it's very rare for a band to have had this much hype before they even release one song. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's fair, and that probably does feel quite ominous in the moment for those people, for the record label and for the women in the band. And I guess it's quite fair because it's really never been done before. I mean, bands had been on television before. I mean, the Monkees came from a TV show, and, you know, Donny Osmond, and even, you know, the early work of the Jackson 5, you know, was documented on television early on.
All right.
And I think at around this time in pop culture in around 2000, S Club 7 was even on a show, you know, that's how they were kind of formed. So I think it had been done, but certainly not in Australia and certainly not to this point, to this degree. And I think, you know, by this point, you think about all the money that's been sunk into this by the label.
Yeah.
And you know, they've obviously already bought all the records, all the songs. They've bought all of the producers in. They've paid for everything. They've done the production, done all this stuff. It's really now on the girls to sell it as a concept, sell it as a product. And it's how charming or not they are in interviews. And I guess when they're confronted with questions like, are you afraid about it all ending soon?
Yeah.
Well, Katie handles it pretty professionally, I think. And I think it's the same interviewer possibly that asks, you know, Do you hate having to repeat everything for the cameras if they miss something good because it's a reality show?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's the same person. Maybe it's not. Somebody else in the episode. But I thought that was an interesting question because it was early on, so early on in reality television that I don't think that really kind of crossed our minds, whereas now we know that when you watch shows like The Bachelor or Married at First Sight or whatever, if you watch those shows.
Take five, you know.
Yeah. Okay, we need you to do it again. We need you to do it this way. And sorry, a camera didn't quite catch it. And, you know, they're kind of fed pointers and they're fed information on what to say.
Yeah.
Or how to say it differently. You know, oh, we just need to give it to you in a soundbite, you know. We need you to give it to us in a soundbite, you know. We're going to use it for the promo, you know. You'll get extra three seconds of airtime if we do it like this, that kind of a thing.
We were all quite naive about this, I think, and maybe I still am. Very. Like there was a thing I was watching a couple of years ago called Terrace House, this Japanese series. And I was sitting there thinking, oh, you know, all this is, you know, it's so natural and they're just capturing, you know, what's going on. And, of course, like 20 years later of reality TV, I should have known. And there was this whole, I mean, I don't want to get into it too much here because this whole horrible thing finished off the show where one of them was getting teased on social media quite badly. But still, even 20 years later, I was there going, they're not editing this to make everyone have a storyline and stuff. You know, it's very natural and it's just showing people in a house. And then when all the, you know, the horrible stuff came out in the media, clearly the producers had been pushing this particular contestant in one direction to make her, you know, a certain way in front of the cameras. And, you know, she wasn't really like that in real life. And still I was just there going, no, this is actually what's happening in front of the cameras and there's no scripts or characters. And, you know.
Well, I think it's actually really interesting because there's, I think about this a lot, actually, like even in like, you know, journalism and, you know, a current affairs news and stuff, you know, stories and interviews are manipulated and edited in certain ways. Yeah. I think editing things is quite commonplace and it is at the end of the day, you know, television. That's the truth of it. Reality is not really reality. And there's these girls on SBS, I think. I forget their names and I forget the show. And they do a program talking about reality television. I only know it because it came up on my Facebook as like a little quick video. And they were interviewing, talking to a girl called Abby Chatfield, who was on The Bachelor.
Okay. Ring a bell.
No, so I don't watch The Bachelor, so I don't know this girl, so I don't know the narrative. But these women were sort of saying, the presenters of this show were saying that they – Abby Chatfield got the villain edit of the Bachelor that year.
Yeah.
And Abby sort of was sitting there and they asked Abby to retell them exactly what happened in real time. And she retold it and it was very different to what the Channel 10 producers of the Bachelor had aired. And to that point, the presenters of this program re-edited it to give Abby a different narrative. So they re-edited the available footage from the show and any of her voiceovers from bits and pieces to sort of give her a different ending.
Yeah.
And it was quite cool to see.
Yeah, gotcha.
And so I think, you know, when you're watching reality television, it's so easy to think that this is just how it is.
It's what's happening in real life.
It's really not at all.
No. And, you know, part of it is, you know, everyone's always like, oh, the editing and the producers. But, you know, if no one was watching it, then, you know, it wouldn't have to happen that way. I think it's like escalation in a way where if you just put out reality, you know, that would be actually super boring and no one would look at it.
I think also, you know, in the because Popstars was the early days of reality television, I think the problem with this particular show is, you know, it's in a way it's a blend of what we now have as music talent variety television, reality television, and then, you know, where we've got like, you know, personality-led and character-led reality television. So, you know, what I mean by that is, you know, we've got The Voice and X Factor and, you know, Australia talent and whatever. So You Think You Can Dance, Search for Supermodel, whatever, that are, you know, in theory kind of talent or skills based, you know, Glow Up or whatever, those shows on Netflix, they're skills based. And then you've got personality led and character led reality like The Bachelor, Married at First Sight, Love Island, whatever, all those different shows. You can kind of, in this early series like Popstars, you can kind of see that they don't really know what they're doing, what it is. I mean, really I've said this before, they are just five singers who auditioned for a band and they got in and it's filmed. And you can see maybe with some of the editing of Tiffany and some of the way that she's picked up on it. I mean, Tiffany is shown in a pretty shitty light. Sophie is shown in a pretty great light.
Mm.
I'm not saying that that's, you know, that Sophie deserved the great light, and I'm not saying that Tiffany didn't deserve the shitty light, although I don't think she did. But I'm just saying, you know, it's... They don't seem to
really
know.
That's how it's panned out, yeah.
It is how it's panned out. And I don't think they really – and, you know, Katie's getting a certain edit and Belinda's barely getting an edit, you know, and Sally's somewhat getting a prudish edit.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, they don't really know what they're doing. And I think in this early day you can kind of see that they're just kind of fumbling their way through like a bit of personality-led editing and a bit of talent-led editing. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah, yeah. It's a very good point, you know.
Thank you.
Sometimes I'm surprised. I'm like, is this the same Alexander that I'm talking to?
Oh, fuck yourself. I mean, you know, and I think just quickly on that, you know, you can see that there's a really – the point I've made is I think, you know, you can see that these people are just musicians. Well, you know, essentially they're musicians, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And then today, for example, you'll have people that will do – like Kira Maguire, who will do The Bachelor, and then she'll do Love Island, and then Bachelor in Paradise, or whatever, all these different shows.
Hmm.
I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here, and all this other stuff. Yeah, Abby Chatfield, also off The Bachelor, and all these other people. And they're personality-led, they're character-led, and they go on to do other reality shows based on their personality and their character. And that's fine. That's no hard feelings to them.
Yeah.
Good luck to them. But it's a totally different thing because you sign up knowing that what you're bringing is your sass, your humor, you're bringing your demureness. You're bringing your, you know, whatever you're bringing, right? You're bringing your own self, your own shtick. But if you're doing a reality show about music, you're bringing your talent in theory, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You know, nobody on The Voice or X Factor ever gets some kind of scandalous ever. Some kind of scandalous edit.
Other than scandalous.
Other than scandalous.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, speaking of editing and Belinda, she is getting a bit of the party pooper, maybe.
She's the bore edit.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't know if that's true or not. I don't think it is. I can't imagine it would be.
No, it's. I mean, to me, it seems like she just wants to be there and work and get on with it and make something good out of it. And yeah, but the next time we see her is sort of in the next scene, and she's terrified of flying. Apparently, and they sort of make a bit of a deal of her, you know, about to puke up in a seat, and then they let her, you know, go into the cockpit, and the pilots sort of show, you know.
Yeah, that was probably the first time we've seen some kind of personal kind of thing about Belinda, maybe.
Yeah, a bit of what's it called?
Light and dark.
Yeah, a bit of light and dark, a bit of tone. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but then I love it. They sort of cut from that storyline with Belinda to Sophie, and there's a guy behind her who's like kicking her chair.
I love it. And she's like whispering to the camera. And you know,
as if the person couldn't hear.
I know. As if the person A couldn't hear her talking and B wasn't actually aware that a huge camera, I mean, cameras were massive back in the day. Yeah. Camera was like filming, pointing towards their direction. I mean, it's so funny because she's like so cheeky and laughing about it.
She's there sort of going, "The guy behind me hates me. Look, every time I put my chair back a little bit, he kicks me. Do you want me to do it? Do you want me to show you?" Yeah, as if he can't hear it. Yeah.
And then he does it and she goes, "See, four times he's done it, four times." And it's really quite funny and quite cute. But again, it's a different edit to Belinda.
Yeah.
And to everybody else, which I think is interesting.
Yeah. And so, you know, obviously flying all around the country, they go to Fox FM, which I'm assuming, is that Melbourne? I can't remember.
I would presume it's Melbourne.
Yeah. And I didn't realize, but one thing they do is perform for the station live, which doesn't seem to be to be recorded. It's just to sort of get the people within the station excited about the release of the single, I reckon. And so they, you know, they sing a little clip of Poison. And for Fox FM, there's that awkward clap where it seems like the song's finished and then everyone starts clapping and they've still got like two more bars of music to go.
And also, I think what's weird about that is the voiceover guy goes, you know, and now the girl, something like, you know, "And now the girls have to prove to the people that they can actually sing." And I was thinking to myself, again, with this narrator, who wrote this script? The only reason these women are on this show is because they can sing. They won auditions. They literally beat thousands of people in auditions.
Because they can sing. Like,
that's right, because they can sing. It's not because they were picked because they may have been picked partly because they were pretty. They may have been picked partly because they could dance. They may have been picked partly because of their change and their difference in their appearances and looks and aesthetic to each other. But primarily they were picked because they could sing.
Yeah.
This is what is so strange.
Oh, if there's one thing we've seen every episode, it's them singing.
Right.
Really well.
It's like, we know they can sing. And when they sing live in that room for those people in that radio station, I'm like, I can't imagine big pop acts overseas. I can't imagine, you know, Little Mix or One Direction or any of those people who you know, Girls Aloud, any of those people that came from reality shows. I can't imagine them actually standing in the boardroom of a studio re-auditioning for people to play their music. It's weird, right?
Well, I mean, one thing I thought was, how do they have the time? Like, I spent a bit of time working at a radio station, and to have the time to sit down and listen to a private recital or something, you know, you'd want to have the microphones on.
Yeah,
and, you know, and that'd be it, and you'd be ready for the next one.
Well, I think it's that radio station with a lady on the front desk. Mm. There's sort of a lady on the front desk. She looks very much like a secretary of the day, you know, a director of first impressions, if you like, as a receptionist. And she sort of leans into some kind of PA microphone and she says, come to the conference room. Bardo are about to perform live. Come to the conference
room. That's right, yeah.
And it's like, lol, she's living for this moment, being the one, Bardo are here. Come to the conference room. It's like, oh, my God, she's loving it so much. Because, you know, secretly that lady wished she was on air on the radio, but she will take the reception job.
Yeah, it's true.
She will take the reception job, but in that moment she gets to tell all those radio producers and presenters, but over here, they're in the reception, they're in the conference room, come to the conference room. She's like, I'm on air.
Yeah. Anyway, they do a great job. I love hearing them sing it a cappella.
Me too.
Yeah. And so Sally does do a bit of, you don't see much of her being herself, I guess, but she often seems to be the one talking to the camera and giving a bit of a narrative. And she's sort of there, you know, going, you know, she comes out of the radio station. She's like, oh, you know, we've done this interview, that interview, did an interview with Guido. Did you remember Guido Hatzis?
I have no idea who this person is. Okay. When she said it, I was like, who the fuck is Guido?
Yeah. Well, I think he was like this comedy guy at the time, and it was this really broad sort of alpha male Greek character who I'd assumed he was Greek at the time, but I think he's got some like Irish name like Tony something. I can't remember. Yeah. So it's this like Irish Australian guy who was doing this really quite retrospectively stereotypical character, and he was winning all these comedy awards. I don't think you'd get away with it now. I think like the whole Chris Lilley business where he was, you know, painting his face certain colors, everyone sort of reassessed all this kind of thing. So I wonder if Guido Hatzis would be allowed today. I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah. I mean, as I said, look, I can't really comment because I don't know who it is, but I don't, from what you said, I don't imagine he would be.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I need to send you some of it. I think he would remember it. Like he was, it was one of those people. It was sort of like in the same vein as like, you know, Tony Martin, Mick Malloy kind of.
Would I like it or hate it? I'd hate it.
Look, at the time, like I'm sure we all probably would have enjoyed it, but you know, retrospectively, I think, you know, there was a certain amount of irony in how broad the character was. And I think at this point, everyone sort of realizes that, you know, irony is a bit of a privilege when you're sending up other people's cultures, maybe. Like Chris Lilley, he was on the ABC, for instance, and he was, you know, there's, with We Can Be Heroes, he was playing a Chinese character who then dressed up at the end as an indigenous character. Yes. So he was doing like a double Ricky layer. Wong. And, you know, at the time, everyone in my circle certainly thought it was hilarious, but sort of because of the irony of it, of like, look at what I'm getting away with on national TV. But, you know, looking back now, you sort of go, yeah, of course that was terribly offensive to a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, I think it's that whole thing with comedy, punching up and punching down.
Yeah.
And I think I initially, when We Can Be Heroes and the Chris Lilley stuff came out, I was horrified.
Right,
I took myself and it very seriously, and anybody that watched it, I was furious about. And then I kind of thought, okay, well, chill out, Alexander. And I watched it, and I was like, oh, it's actually really funny. And
yeah,
he's really funny, and he's actually brilliant, a great character actor, and brilliant, really.
And there's often a really heartfelt story right underneath it. So I feel like if he pulled away some of the, you know, more shocking, like the elements that are just there to be shocking. There's something, you know, interesting under there, but
yeah, I do think there's a fine line in with the tone and some of the points that he, especially in that more subsequent series, the more recent one, whatever it was called, Weirdos or whatever.
Yeah, the Netflix one. Yeah,
the Netflix one. I think there were probably some lines that were crossed potentially, but not. I wasn't outraged by it, but also it's easy for us to sit here, two white men talking about, oh, I don't know about the irony, you know, the irony in culture, different people's culture. But then again, we're not differently cultured, are we? We're not
No,
we're
no,
not
that's
people
right.
From Tonga who have been, you know, we're not watching a white guy paint their face to look like me and then appropriate stereotypes about young Tongan men. You know what I mean? Or,
yeah.
Or like the differently abled kid who goes to England to live on a estate.
Yeah, that's right. He's like a lord or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I do. Like, I think Chris Lilly is very, very clever and very talented. But I just, yeah. And I think things like the Guido thing, I don't know. It's different if you are like part of a, you know, you're standing up your own culture. You know, like Mary Custis does Effie so well.
Yeah.
Because, you know, and she did that for, you know, she did that for, you know, the purposes of kind of taking back ownership of the,
yeah,
sort of stereotypes,
like the whole Nick Giannopoulos kind of set as well.
And I
think
that's really brilliant and smart and so well done. And
because they sort of reclaimed all the racist slurs for their
own.
And
she does it. She does it. Nick Giannopoulos does it. You know, but you know, the character of Effie, you can't help but love her because it's a even though it's a character, you know, it's a character. It's such a well realized kind of lean into everything that we've been taught to think about those people.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it funny because you're laughing with them.
Yeah.
You're not laughing necessarily at them.
And I think Guido was, I thought at the time that he was sort of that same kind of person, but he's called like Tony, I wish I could remember his last name, Tony Sinclair, Tony Mulclair or something. And born in Ireland or something like that. Yeah. So yeah, it's all a bit awkward to think back at, you know, some of those things.
But, for sure.
You know, it's great to be able to learn from our past.
Absolutely.
Yes, I've thrown out all my Chris Lilly DVDs since. Anyway, they're getting clothes given to them. Now, this is something you sort of remembered.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm pleased.
So we're back on the band now, by the way.
Yes, so Bardo, we're going back to Bardo.
Yeah, they're in, it's not Effie and Nick Giannopoulos. They're getting fitted for suits. It's Bardo are at Bardo headquarters. Is that
That's right. So this is what I remembered and I thought perhaps was cut from the previous episode. I think it must have been because here we are having them talking to the owners and creators of Bardo. I think I mentioned in another episode of Fruity Alexia that, you know, they wanted the girls wanted the name Bardo, but the brand already existed. So they struck a deal that they could, you know, be outfitted, you know, exclusively by Bardo for their concerts or whatever and blah, blah, blah. I mean, what was kind of weird about it is I don't think name registrations work like that. But anyway,
oh, right.
Like,
yeah, I don't know
I'm
anything
pretty
about
sure
it.
If you're registering your name, your business name for the purposes of, like, for example, the Bardo girls, there was a different name, business name registration. That was called something like, you know, Five Chicks Singing PTY or Five Girls Singing PTY. I've made it up, but it's something like that basically.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, trading as Bardo. So actually, I don't know that it was necessary except for an advertising shtick. And I thought it was interesting because they're kind of in this, you know, warehouse distribution center kind of thing for Bardo, which at that point was a new brand and early days of its sort of success. And the women are kind of dressing them all and presenting all the different outfits. And they're saying, oh, we can put some diamantes on the legs here for Belinda's pants. Oh, we're going to cover them in diamantes. And, you know, Tiffany's trying on a top and she's got a couple of different cowboy hats. This is my blue hat. This is my pink hat. And, you know, Katie is not super thrilled because she's wearing all black.
Yeah.
And, you know, she says to the camera, when have you ever seen me in all black? Which is totally fair.
Yeah.
Because we
never have.
That's
a very good point. Yeah.
And they, the lady from Bardo or whoever she is, makes a comment to the camera of, you know, everyone seems pretty happy except for Katie. You know, she's, you know, kind of got this cyber chick sort of look and, you know, it's really
which
hard
is such
for
a
us.
Like word of the time, like cyber.
Wasn't it cyber.
Yeah.
No,
I'm going into cyberspace, you know.
she sort of says something like, we've got a, you know, it's a bit hard for us to get our head around Katie's sort of cyber chick look. You know, we're all about glamour and being sexy. And, you know, that's why we really love Tiffany and Sophie. Oh, again, I levitated.
Can I just ask, when you're levitating, because like in a cartoon when someone's angry, steam comes out their ears or their nose maybe. So for you to be levitating when you're angry, where's the steam coming out of?
My ass.
Great. Next question.
I was so angry. I was like, firstly, I hate the inference that a cyber chick, and also I can't be bothered getting into the stupidity of that moniker, but anyway, that a cyber chick can't be sexy or glamorous. I just think that's ridiculous. I mean, you Katie Underwood in that indigo blue patent, you know, pleather cat suit in the Poison video, she's sexy. With a blue lipstick, she's sexy. Mm. That's a sexy, glamorous cyber chick.
Yeah.
You know, it's like these two women, their perception of sexy is, you know, this cowboy, this sort of, you know, appropriated cowboy look on Tiffany, or yeah, this sort of, you know, laced up the front boob tube, you know, bodaciousness that they're sort of way they're trying to dress Sophie. It's like, okay, so that's your perception of sexy, but not actually everyone's, and not actually everyone's perception of glamour. It's really, really weird. And I mean, I don't disagree that Katie's look and aesthetic has that kind of very timely, relevant, you know, cybery, new millennium-y kind of, you know, Jennifer Lopez Waiting for Tonight, you know, green laser kind of vibe. And that's great and that's fine to lean into, but it doesn't make it not glamorous and it doesn't make it not sexy and it may make her more of a challenge, but you would have thought as a creative person, you would lean into that creative challenge, right?
Yeah. And is like, the Bardot brand still like that these days? Is it very glamorous and or is it just sort of shopping center
I think it depends on who you ask. Okay, I went through a bit of a rebrand many years ago, and it's had a couple actually since Pop Stars, and it is basically now, you know, it's sort of a Cotton On or a Sports Girl or whatever. Okay. Not exactly Cotton On, maybe more like a Sports Girl. You know, I wouldn't say it's glamorous. I think it's probably fine for certain occasions and certain needs of certain young people, but I don't think it's glamorous.
Yeah. It's probably like if they made clothes in my size, I'd probably be shopping there. Is that what you're saying?
Sure. If a leopard print camisole top is your thing, sure. Made of, you know, polyurethane, you know, fibers, it's going to set on fire as soon as you stand near an open flame. Sure.
Jeez. Okay.
I guess we're not going to get sponsored by Bardot, are we?
No, probably not. It's good to see Michael Napthalai is sort of, I feel like he's, at his wit's end almost again in this episode, and he's just whinging about the schedule the whole time.
Yeah.
And I get the feeling he's sort of, you know, the power dynamic there has shifted a bit, and now that the band have a bit of, you know, our power over him a little bit because they can make demands, because he sort of goes, oh, thankfully all the girls are happy, you know, which makes me happy, you know. So I feel like he's now, you know, like the reality of it's all hit for him and he's sort of having to back down a little bit.
Yeah, partly. I agree with you. Definitely. Mm. Yeah. It seems like he's sort of in the motions now of this kind of radio press tour. You know, I'm part of the machine now. Off I go. Yeah.
And he has to bow to every whim and, you know, if one of them has to stop to go to the toilet, he's got to stop the whole van, you know.
Yeah.
And they must go to Adelaide next because I think Katie grew up in Adelaide even though she was in Melbourne when she auditioned. And they go to her old primary school, I think. And meet up with her old, like, teacher or principal. Yeah, that's quite cute. I mean, I don't know how much publicity they're going to get from going to a primary school. I mean, you know, fans for the future maybe. Because
it's not about that. It's that, yeah. That is just totally a press stunt.
Yeah, it's giving back, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh, it's not even giving back. It's not even for the graciousness of that principal begging her to bring them.
Yeah.
It's more about
headlines.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. What I do love is they go into the school hall where all the children are gathered, and the noise of the kids screaming is like an air raid siren.
Yes. So high pitched.
It is, isn't it? And it's just, I don't know how, like, I could never be a primary school teacher if that's what happens at a primary school. Jeez.
Yeah, it's pretty hardcore.
Yeah.
It's
pretty, I can't imagine you deal very well with it either.
No, I'd have to walk in there screaming at them, shut the fuck up.
And, of course, you know, they do a wonderful job singing Poison to the, you know, kindergarten to year sixes, and they start doing that out-of-time clap that I love at every concert, you know, where the person makes them sort of clap along, and then after about three beats, the whole crowd is out of time, and somehow the musicians manage to keep the beat going. I don't know how they do it. It must be so distracting.
It would annoy the shit out of me if I were trying to sing and you were hearing this out of time clap. Oh, fuck, it's annoying.
Yeah.
I, you know, that's the true fact. I never partake in an audience clap.
Don't you?
I will not be a part of that train wreck.
You sit there with a pout.
I sit there on my hands fuming.
Yeah. You never ever. You wouldn't stand up for hands in the air, wave a lighter.
I do. I mean, I stand up and I totally, hands in the air like I just don't care. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
I'll stand up and I'll chant and I'll be super excited about it, but I try not to clap. Well, if I do clap, put it this way, if I clap, I clap in time and to the beat and I then glare at everybody around me for being so poorly timed. But rhythm isn't everybody's friend.
No, it's true. And I imagine, like, if it's like a U2 concert or something like that, like your fold back as the performer would be so loud you can't hear the performer anyway. But for poor Bardo, they're face to face with the screaming
3,000 screaming children or something. Yeah,
yeah. So, and then randomly, the episode just kind of doesn't really go anywhere. And
so weird.
Yeah. Suddenly they cut across to live to the studios, Warner Records, to the offices. And the big news of how the single Poison has performed.
Yeah. Well, it's weird because it cuts all of a sudden out of nowhere. And then you're like, and then you hear Jackie O speak and you see Jackie O on the camera. And you're like, oh, yeah, I forgot Jackie O was in this show.
Yeah. I mean, she must have been thrilled she got called back in, you know.
and they're like, oh, the news, we're here to talk about Bardo's debut single Poison's performance for the week.
Yeah. And?
And it's really strange because, you know, Chris Moss is sitting down in this chair with all the girls around him.
Yeah.
And he says, oh, there's been some stiff competition, you know, NSYNC, yeah. Destiny's Child. There's a new act out of Perth called Lone Star.
Do you know who they are?
Not a fucking clue.
No, couldn't remember them.
Chris Franklin. Not a fucking clue.
Oh, I know who Chris Franklin is.
Who the fuck's Chris Franklin?
Do you remember Chris Franklin? He won the Comedy Festival Awards or something, and then he came out with I'm a bloke, I'm a yobbo, I'm a bloke,
as in Meryl Bainbridge's bitch, but read
and
on.
My best friend's name is Robbo. Is it Meryl Bainbridge's bitch?
Yes,
I don't remember. Yeah.
It was Meredith Brooks. Sorry, Meredith Brooks's right. bitch, redone as a yobbo. Okay, well, hideous.
Yeah, so yeah.
Basically, that's what they're up against.
Yeah.
And then it's really weird because he's like, oh, you know, we're over-indexing really well. We're performing well in New South Wales and Victoria and Queensland. And it's sort of this weird thing. He keeps looking at this bit of paper and he goes, you know, we are set for a top 10 debut, which, by the way, is not huge.
No.
A top 10. I mean, it's very successful if you're a pop star.
It's better than
fine.
I've done, yeah.
Better, definitely better than I've done. But it's not exactly what you would expect this announcement to be because – you've been watching this show now for 11 episodes
yeah.
and you've been, you know, you've probably placed your pre-order, I think
and
I said it.
And they've cut live to it as well to like build up
to
the
tell
excitement.
You this announcement.
Yeah.
And then he's like, we will at least have a top 10 debut. It's so weird.
Yeah.
And then he goes, I predict, and I might have to eat my words, I predict it'll be the number one song in the country by this time next week.
Yeah. So please watch our website for the next 24 hours to see. It's the biggest anticlimax I've ever seen in my life, I think.
It is. It's so bad. It's like, it's just so, you know, such a letdown. And also, like, here's the thing. It's a Sunday night, right?
Mm.
So when was the song released? I don't know what point this was. Like, was the song released for a week already or was the song released for a day and then – you know, it was going to have a week of tracking.
I reckon it must have already been on Rage the morning before or something like that.
You know with like music though.
Yeah.
They know what's going to be a number one. They know if what, you know, they put a certain amount of money into stuff and they, you know, buy the records and stuff. It's like they know what's going to be a number one. He knew it was going to be a number one. It was going to be number one. It could not be number one.
You've just got to wait for the data to come in from all the, you know, record stores across the country and the radio stations and stuff like that. So they were probably sitting there going, oh, God, bloody, you know, HOFM in Hobart hasn't sent us their ratings yet.
It's true. You're probably right. Yeah. But it's a bit of an anticlimax and kind of a bit of a fizzer,
I feel like
really.
The whole series was potentially they could have built it up for this moment and, you know, nothing really comes of it. Watch the website for 24 hours. Great. I forgot what I've written here because it was so many days ago. Anyway, we've both worked in radio a little bit in different capacities at some point. And I guess, did you sort of have a regular show in Melbourne for a bit? Or
I did. On a
it?
Community radio station, I had a regular show when I was, I don't know, I probably was 19, 20.
And how did you find, like, preparing for the show, I guess, you know, you've promised there's going to be a show on a Saturday or a Sunday. How did you find working out what the content was going to be for it?
I think, well, look, you know, in my limited experience, it was community radio, so it was pretty up to you really what you did.
Did you sit there and go, how am I going to fill an hour?
Mine was a very specific topic. So mine was about young LGBTIQ people.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Before, well, actually, I think it was probably before the Q, the plus, the A, and everything was added, actually.
Yeah.
And so it was very specifically geared in that way. So it was kind of, there was a lot of topical information to kind of do every week,
every episode.
So it wasn't like too hard really to sort of fill the time for me, but I imagine it would be potentially for other people. But then if you work in professional radio, usually there's producers and there's a whole bunch of people that support your program, right?
Yeah, yeah. I just got the feeling a bit with this episode that they'd like promised to put an episode out and didn't really have that much to go with. So it felt like a bit of a mishmash and like, okay, we've got to fill this episode with stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think you mean because of the reveal at the end?
Well, just the whole thing. I feel, you know, I remember, I don't know if you've seen Twin Peaks. Have we talked about this before?
We haven't, no. And I have seen bits of it.
You have seen it. So it was this whole mystery, like the very first series, this whole mystery, who killed Laura Palmer, who killed Laura Palmer.
So that's the only series I've seen, yeah.
Yeah. And it was such a big thing at the time. Like people just really, really wanted to know who killed Laura Palmer that the producers forced, what's his name? David Lynch. They forced David Lynch to conclude it before the series was up. So you get to about episode 17. And they reveal who has killed Laura Palmer in that episode. And then he's still contracted for another how many episodes. And I remember, this interview with David Lynch, and he was saying, it's like they killed the goose that was laying the golden eggs for that series. Like we could have kept that going for ages and ages and ages. But we revealed who killed Laura Palmer way too early. And then I just had to suddenly fill in the rest of the episodes with, you know, a whole new storyline, and the audience started to lose interest. And
pretty much.
Yeah. And I can't really remember at the time if we were feeling the same way about Bardo as well, like by this point.
I don't think we were, and that's because remember, in real life, in our real lives, the CD was about to come out.
Right, yeah.
So okay. I think the difference is by this point it's become not just a television show where we're watching and committed to every week. We're actually also living it because we're seeing posters around. We're seeing, you know, radio ads, hearing radio ads, seeing the video clip on Rage or Channel V, if you had Channel V at the time. So I think it was sort of still at the time, at this point of the series, a frenzy. It was still a frenzy and a bit of a, what's the word, like a movement, a Bardo movement, I guess.
Yeah,
pop stars movement, I think.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, by this point, clearly the formula had worked for a reality show. It had yet to be proven as having worked to launch a record.
Yeah.
It's about to be proven, I presume, in the next episode we're about to see.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. And I wonder too, there's something about it still being present today, I think, that it's funny that it's stuck in people's heads for so long, I think. Like, you know, we watched a bit of a Cabell. I think we've talked about Cabell in our last
minisode. About Cabell, yeah.
And since we've seen a little clip from a morning show or something like that, and they play, you know, a few seconds of the clip, and you know, Bardo, they released a few Bardo singles on vinyl last year, maybe. And Belinda makes the point that, you know, there's still a lot of fans out there, people who are still into Bardo. There's got to be something there that, you know, they've sort of inceptioned it into people's minds. So even if the next couple of years were a bit of a flop for the band, they've stuck in our heads like 20 years later, you know.
Do you know what? I 100,000,000% agree with you. And I actually think, I could be wrong here, and people might be sitting at home cringing at this thought. If they did like they could do a reality series today, schmickly produced, with those five women coming back together to record a reunion album.
Yeah.
And I reckon it would be the number one show in the country.
Right, yeah.
Because it would, I think, you know, people our age that were teenagers at the time watching it, you know, children and teenagers, I think early on in this series they talk about the band being geared toward 12-year-old girls.
Oh, right.
Or something like that, being geared toward young girls. But it wasn't, the show was just so captivating. Parents were made to watch it, and then parents became addicted. It was a show everybody was talking about. You couldn't avoid it. You know, you saw some of the people in the mall, you know, talking about who their favorite characters were in a Vox Pop section, and they were not people you would think would be watching the show necessarily.
Yeah.
So it really was something. It was a bit like the race that stopped the nation. It was kind of like the reality show that stopped the nation for the period in which it aired. So I think there is great affection for Bardo, those five girls, and I actually think a lot of affection for Jackie O comes from that as well. I think, you know, if you think of Jackie O, a lot of people, if you were to ask them what is Jackie O from, if they were around at that time, they would say one of the things that she's known for is pop stars, even though she's done so much other work, and she's fabulous. But
there was that Angels show. What was it with Ian Thorpe?
Thorpe's Angels. Thorpe's or whatever
Angels.
It was.
Yeah.
Which Undercover was also with Katie Angels. Undercover Angels.
Yeah.
Something like that.
I'd love Katie to watch Underwood. That.
We'll see if we can to watch find that again. It. But it definitely, I think, there's so much affection and love for the girls of Bardo that I think if they were to do it again today, it would make a great show. Can you imagine seeing them all sing? Seeing them all like have to do some reconditioning for their voices and some different vocal coaching, and you know what's required today of musicians and acts is so different to what it was then. I actually think there's great affections in the public and the pop culture zeitgeist of Australians for these people.
Okay, well, that was episode 11 of Popstars Australia. Two more to go, I think, of the official Popstars Australia series, and then a few more little exciting surprises after that.
We've got an Instagram. Send us a DM, like and follow along for a rollicking good time. The best good time you can have online. By the way, that's the first read I've done, and how fucking schmick was it?
That was good. Yeah, you almost sounded like a professional voiceover artist.
Almost. Follow the link. Oh, this is you. I'll do it anyway. Follow the link in our description to our Acast support page. Why should listeners send us money, Alex? Tell us.
Because, you know, we've both got jobs and they're quite hard, and it would be great if we didn't have to work so hard in our spare time, don't you think?
It would be so great. And, you know, you and I, we're doing the best we can to sort of manage this passion project amongst real life, which is a challenge, but we're doing it and we're enjoying it. And I think that's the main thing.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, one day it'd be great to do it in the same room together at some point.
Wouldn't it?
And imagine if there was also a little crowd there. To cheer us
imagine on. If we did it live at, like, say, the Melbourne Comedy Festival or something.
Exactly.
Imagine if we could do...
We do a little viewing. Alexia.
Yeah, Fridi Alexia. Show. Yeah, and we do a bit of a... What if we could bring some of the girls onto it and talk to them?
That would be great.
To do a little performance.
Oh, that would be good.
What a moment.
Yeah. So, anyway, without support on our Acast support page, none of this will come true. So and you'll be upsetting your two favorite podcast hosts.
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah. How do you think it would go in front of a live audience? Do you think are you game fit? Are you match fit? Are you ready to jump out there in front of people and entertain them?
Oh, I'm fine to do that. I would need to reverse the aging process by about 25 years and lose about 25 kilos before. But other than that, I think I'm ready to go.
Right,
as long as nobody shouts at me from the audience, talk to me about your boob job and talk to me about your periods, I think I'll be fine.
You can't say that because now that'll, if we do have a live audience and they've listened to this, that'll be the first thing they yell out. So you've now primed them.
Now we'll see if people really pay attention.
Yeah, it's going to be a hashtag.
Tell me about your boob job, tell me about your periods.
Yeah. Okay, we better get in quick and make the t-shirt before anyone else can.
Already on it.
Excellent. All right. Well, on that note, that's probably enough for this week, I think. And then we can, get onto doing the next exciting episode of Fruity Alexa.
Can't wait.
Woo. Okay. Hope everyone's as excited as I am. Bye, everybody.
I just made that really awkward for you on purpose, but you're welcome. No one's excited as you, but go.
Yeah,
go
exactly. You. Yeah. I just, you know, if you leave a gap, then I try and fill the silence. And it's always with something I haven't thought through saying. So. So you're welcome to deploy that whenever if you want to embarrass me. That's fine.
I can't do the technical stuff, so I can't deploy it, but I'll live on it in my memory.
All right.
Bye, bro. I'll see you later. Bye.
Bye.
Lots of excited. There you go. There's your blooper for next week.
Blip, blip, blip.
Hang on a minute. Let me just...
I'll mark that time. Great.
Regroup myself.
Yeah.
What did you just say? I can't even remember. Sorry.
It's all right. Just read the... You can read the script.
I don't ever... If I... Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Here we go.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too.
Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Bowl and Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Bowl and Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bowlandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.